Chapter 6. A Judgment. When Fiona entered the court, it was just after 9:15. She waited for the room to become quiet and noticed the worried faces of the journalists. There might not be enough time left for the story to make the morning papers. In front of her sat the barristers and Marina Green. Mr. Henry was there, but without his wife this time. Fiona summarised the facts of the case and then said, "I have just returned from visiting Adam in hospital. I sat with him for an hour. He is clearly very ill. A doctor has told this court that by tomorrow his situation will be very dangerous, which is why I am giving judgment late on a Tuesday evening." She thanked the barristers, Marina Green, and the hospital for helping her to come to a decision in a difficult case. She then summarised the history, the leukaemia and usual treatment, which generally had good results. She said that Adam was having breathing problems. The defence had argued that Adam was 3 months short of his 18th birthday, was highly intelligent, and his decisions should be considered as those of an adult. His faith was true and should be respected. "He is a very special child," Fiona said. "I might even say, as one of the nurses did this evening, that he is a lovely boy, and I'm sure his parents would agree. But I do not believe that he understands how ill he might become without the transfusion. In fact, he has a romantic idea about what it is to suffer. However..." She let the word hang for a moment as she looked down at her notes. "However, I am not guided by his understanding of his situation. I am guided instead by the decision of another judge, Mr. Justice Ward, who also writes about a Jehovah's Witness case involving a teenager. The interests of the child are most important in my decision. I also have to think about Adam's wishes, that he does not want to have the transfusion. It is a right for all adults to say no to treatment, and Adam is prepared to die for his faith." She paused. "But I do not believe that Adam's mind and ideas are completely his own. He has only known life as a Jehovah's Witness, and so of course he will have the strong ideas of his faith. It will also not be good for his interests to suffer a terrible death. This court does not know if there is a heaven which, one day, Adam will discover or not. His interests are helped more by his love of poetry and his lively intelligence. He must be protected from his religion and from himself, so I rule against the wishes of Adam and his parents. It is lawful for the hospital to give Adam the treatments which they think are necessary." It was almost 11 o'clock when Fiona left the Courts of Justice. She went to an all-night shop on Fleet Street to buy a ready meal. The night before, it would have been a dark and sad thing to do, but tonight she felt light and free, maybe because she hadn't eaten properly in 2 days. She bought a fish pie and some fruit and gave her money to a young boy. She was singing the Sally Gardens to herself as she went along High Holborn. She would cook the pie while she got ready for bed and eat it in front of the TV while she watched the news. Then nothing could come between her and bed. Tomorrow's case was a divorce involving a famous guitarist and an almost famous wife who wanted a large slice of his 27 million. She turned into Gray's Inn Square, loving the way that the sound of traffic died as she went through the gate and towards the buildings where many judges and barristers lived around a beautiful garden. They were interesting people who did interesting things: music, writing, fishing even, and wine tasting. She loved it here and never wanted to leave. She entered her building and noticed that the time switch for the lights was on. She walked up to the second floor and turned into the corridor that led to her apartment. Then she immediately understood why the light had been on. Her husband was there, just getting to his feet, a book in his hand. He looked both angry and humiliated. Behind him against the wall was his suitcase, which he had been using as a seat while he sat reading. Locked out. Working while waiting. And why not? Her immediate thought, and it was a dark, selfish one, was that now she would have to share her fish pie with him. And then she thought she wouldn't. She'd rather not eat. "I've been phoning you all evening," he said. She unlocked the door and walked in without looking back. She went to the kitchen, put her stuff on the table, and paused there. Her heart was beating much too hard. She heard his steps as he pulled in his suitcase along the corridor. Then she went to her usual place on the chaise longue and began reading through some papers. Jack entered and went to get himself a drink, then offered her one, which she refused. He wore jeans and a white shirt, and he hadn't shaved. He crossed the room to his chair and sat down heavily. His chair, her chair, married life again. Then he said, "Look, Fiona, I love you." After several seconds, she said, "I'd rather you slept in the other room." He nodded slowly, but did not get up. They both knew all the things that were not being said. That she had allowed him into the flat meant that he could sleep here. He had not told her yet whether the statistician had ordered him to go or he had changed his mind. He had not spoken about the change of locks. What they needed now was a huge argument with lots of accusations. There would be several chapters to it, and it would take place over a long period of time. His guilt would come in angry, complaining words. She would tell him how humiliated he had made her feel. It might be months before she would allow him into her bed again, with the ghost of the other woman moving around them. But she knew that they would find a way of getting back, more or less, to what they once had. The thought of the huge effort involved tired her further. Yet she had to do it. Like a contract she had signed. She realised that she would like a drink after all, but that might have looked too much like she wanted to celebrate. Most of all, she could not bear to hear again that he loved her. She wanted to be in bed alone. What was to stop her? She stood and picked up her papers, and it was then that he started to speak. He talked for a long time. He said he was sorry. He tried to explain his actions. He talked earnestly about his age and his faithfulness to her before Melanie. He said how, as soon as he had arrived at Melanie's place, he realised his mistake. She was a stranger. He didn't understand her. And when they went into her bedroom, Fiona put up a hand. She didn't want to hear about the bedroom. He paused, considered, and continued. He was a bloody fool, he realised, to be driven by sexual need, and he should have come back the night that he left, but he was embarrassed and felt he had to continue. "Everything we have," he said. "Everything we've made together. This love that..." "I've had a long day," Fiona said, and crossed the room. She stopped by the kitchen to take an apple and a banana from her shopping on the table. Having them in her hand brought back into her mind her happy walk home from work. She had felt the beginnings of something becoming easier. It was hard to bring that back now. She pushed open the door and saw his suitcase standing on its wheels by the bed. Then it came to her what she felt about Jack's return. So simple. She was disappointed that he had not stayed away. Just a little longer.